Hello, and welcome to Final Girls Horrorcast, the show where we review some of the horror, thriller, and sci-fi movies currently available on your favorite streaming sites. I'm Amy.
And I'm Carly.
Today we are going to look into Jonathan Glazer's 2013 sci-fi thriller Under the Skin and Alex Garland's 2015 sci-fi thriller Ex Machina. But first, let's talk about some up-and-coming horror movies with a new segment we like to call Trailer Trash Talk. We need to get like a cool like trailer like trash
trailer
talk.
Trash talk. Yeah. echo.
So the trailers, this is going to be a new segment we do at the beginning of all of our podcasts, and we're just going to watch some of the new horror trailers that are out right now. The first one we watched was Found Footage 3D. It's directed by Steven DeGennaro. It's his first full-length movie. It premiered just a few weeks ago on August 20th at the Bruce Campbell Horror Film Festival, and it won the festival's inaugural jury award. What did you think about the trailer, Carly?
I'm excited for it. I like when comedy meets horror.
Yeah.
And there's like good elements of both. So I think, yes, bring it on.
It definitely has like a Cabin in the Woods kind of feel. Like it's like making fun of a specific genre of horror. And, I like how they're doing the 3D because that's ridiculous. You need special cameras for that. And who's going to bring that when they're,
and I like that they call it out.
Yeah, they
do.
Why
would anybody do that?
It's so dumb. But then it just turns into like an all hell breaks loose type of thing. I think it looks great. It's got ton of praise. The guys from Modern Horrors podcast were talking about it and we're super stoked on it. So I'm excited to see it. I don't know when it's going to come out. It's doing some, I think it's doing Fright Fest, in London. And then I don't know where it's going to be. So hopefully it comes out soon on like VOD or Amazon or something so we can watch it.
Yeah.
That will be a funny episode.
I want to see it.
I know, I'm excited. So I guess we're not trash talking that movie. That one sounds good.
No, I'm on board. Yes. Can't wait.
I do kind of want to trash talk The Disappointments Room a little bit, just based on the trailer. Obviously, this is just for fun, but
I just immediately thought of The Skeleton Key,
right?
Which I know that like the premise is different, but like it really reminded me
of
it.
It's different, but is it? Like it looks, I immediately thought the same thing. The fact that we
right,
both thought
like
of the
weird
skeleton,
devil room.
Yeah. Like the fact that we both thought of the skeleton key must say something. And I mean, yeah. I was thinking like, it almost looks like every horror movie made in the last 10 years, like made into a supercut. Like,
yeah, like family with the son with the shaggy haircut
right.
drives up to a new home.
Oh, we're at a new house. Oh, there's a secret room. Oh, we have
to
find the keys.
Seems to not be stable.
Yeah, like the mom isn't. Why is the woman always not stable, by the way? Oh my God.
We're crazy.
We're hysterical.
We're
no,
crazy.
I fucking hate that shit. Okay. But that The Disappointments Room is by DJ Caruso, who did Disturbia, and that was like the last movie anyone cared about that he did. So, I mean, Disturbia.
Oh, weird. So apparently it was written by Wentworth Miller, who people would know him from Prison Break, and he was also in, what is that DC show? Like Heroes of Tomorrow, I think. He's an actor. So that's kind of interesting.
I know neither of those things, but I'll take your word for it.
He's a nice chap. I've never met him, but
he's a nice chap.
I like him. He seems cool.
Right. Well, I mean, maybe it'll be good. It just looks so familiar and uninteresting to me, but yeah.
Yeah, we'll it seemed very generic.
Yeah. But, you know, maybe they're doing that on purpose in the trailer. I kind of thought the same thing about other movies. Don't judge a book by its cover, right? We'll give it the benefit of the doubt, but it doesn't
look judged, what's that movie called that we just saw?
Don't Breathe.
I judged that book a little bit by its cover and I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, let's talk about it. What did you think of Don't Breathe? Because we both saw it last week.
Yeah, so, I really liked it. I didn't realize that Sam Raimi had, produced it, which surprises me because I feel like this was hyped up so much. There, like, you could not watch anything on Hulu. You could not go to a movie without seeing the trailer for this movie.
It was
like pushed.
Yeah.
So hard.
And honestly, when they push that hard, it's usually not good. I mean, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah. The director was the guy who did the Evil Dead remake, and his movies kind of have the same feel to me, whereas the beginning was kind of like, you know, the story building wasn't that great to me, but like once it like kicked in, I was on board and I was like, this is great. Yes.
So you did like it then?
I did like
it. I liked it. I didn't love it. I feel like people loved it. Like, I hear people saying it's the best horror film of the year.
No.
It's really not. It's maybe number six on the list for me.
I don't think it was the best movie of the year. I was pleasantly surprised by it, though.
I think the trailer did ruin it. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, right?
It did. It ruined it a little bit. Don't watch the trailer if you haven't, and then just go see
it. Good luck.
I know, it's hard to avoid it. It's everywhere. Yeah, that's kind of shitty. And you were right, like, when we talked last time, they did ruin it with the trailer, but...
Yeah, I'm like, too much.
Yeah.
They could have just had it as, like, you know, these kids break into this blind army vet's home and chaos ensues.
Right.
They didn't need to, like...
Yeah.
Go
further
than that.
They didn't have to go past that.
Yeah.
I will say the very, very end of the movie... the very end, like the last scene, I loved it. I liked the way they left it. I will say that. And I don't like that oftentimes in movies. Like usually the end either makes or breaks a movie for me. So, I was impressed by the ending of that. They could have easily made that shitty. And
I
saw an alternate ending and the alternate ending was shitty. So I'm glad they didn't go that route.
Yeah. I liked the ending as well. I liked, obviously don't want to give too much away.
Just ignore it.
Yeah, don't want to give anything away, but, it's worth a watch. I think so. I went to go see it. The movie theater by my house does $6 Wednesdays. And so I was like, all right, let's take a gander at this guy. And, I enjoyed it. I feel like see it in the theaters.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll have the same effect. Without the loud noises and like being in your face.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, comparatively speaking to a lot of the shit coming out, like it's good. Is it the best of the year? That makes me dislike it more is when people say it's the best of the year. Don't say that. Just let it go.
Yeah,
it's not the best of the year. There's no way it's going to be Green Room. It's just not going to.
No. Green Room is no. Yeah.
And honestly, The Witch, I personally love The Witch, so it's nowhere near that. Level.
I loved the
Witch. It's nowhere near those levels. I'm really excited for Neon Demon though. Neon Demon is coming out, I think on Amazon this week, if it's not already out there. So
have you seen it?
No, yet? I'm really excited to go. I wanted to go to the theater and see it, and I went a week after it came out and it was already out of all the theaters in my area.
What?
Yeah, it was insane how quickly it was out of theaters. So I am going to be watching that this week for sure. So we can talk about it a little bit next week if you want.
Cool.
Okay. So let's start talking about Under the Skin. The two movies I picked were Under the Skin and, Ex Machina. And I picked them both because they're both sci-fi thrillers. They have very familiar and reminiscent tones of each other. They both seem very, like, they both remind me of Kubrick a lot. They have similar themes. And they also kind of go along with the guest a little bit. So I thought it'd be a nice little segue into seeing this, like, anti-human person or thing that we are supposed to be semi-rooting for. I just really love both of these movies too, and any excuse for me to talk about them is exciting to me, so I'm gonna do it. Cause it's our podcast and I can do whatever I want. So, people either love Under the Skin or they hate it. And Carly, which person are you?
It was not my favorite.
It's not for you.
I told Amy I fell asleep like 3 times trying to watch it because it is a very slow movie. I definitely had to watch it with closed captioned on because it takes place in Scotland, right?
Yep.
And so everyone kind of speaks with a Scottish brogue. And
for those 10 lines of dialogue, you needed closed captions.
Yeah. When the closed captions on, I'm like, oh, this is easy to understand. But I feel like when it wasn't, I was just like nodding off. And I feel like it was like weird, art housey, bizarro. I don't know. My huge thing with movies is when I don't care about any of the characters, it's really hard for me to watch it and like want to finish it, because like I didn't care about anybody in this
movie. I hear you. I 100% agree with you that I have to care about the characters or else I don't give a shit about the movie. But I really cared about Scarlett Johansson. Like, I didn't really empathize with her, but I cared about her and her experience. I love a good art house movie. If it's done well, I love it. And honestly, from the second this movie started, it had me hooked, because the whole beginning reminds me of 2001 A Space Odyssey. Which is another one of my favorites. Like, I just love that movie. Is insane. And like, there's nothing like it. So I thought that the beginning was really amazing, how it paid such a, the detail and the sound and the way it was shot, the weird white background. It was just very,
in contrast of how everything else is really dark up until that point.
I really loved that part of it. Apparently this movie is based on a book, by Michael Faber. I did not know that until like just before we started recording. Because I was watching an interview, with the director, and he was mentioning about, how he had a hard time. It took 10 years to make this movie. How he had a hard time, like putting the book on film, and how to do it the way he wanted to, and how he wrote and rewrote and rewrote and rewrote the script. And the final draft was when he finally realized it has to be all about her and her experience and nothing else. So it does seem slow, at some points, and the shots are really long, but they're long on purpose, and they're long to really create a feeling of isolation. I think she's really relatable in that she's just alone in this world she's not familiar with, and trying to, like relate and deal and try to even blend in, is kind of where she ends up. Whereas before she seemed very indifferent. I just really liked viewing her journey, especially since there's very little dialogue, and I'm talking a lot. I'm sorry.
No, you're but, fine. Go
I
ahead.
I mean, those are the types of things that I really love about this movie. But yeah, I understand why people don't like it. I really do get it. You know, watching it a second time, I think I loved it even more. But I don't know that I could get you to watch it again. Yeah,
I would consider it, because obviously, like, whenever I watch something a second time, I always like pick up things that I missed. Yeah. Maybe the first time, especially in a movie that doesn't necessarily grab my attention the first time, because like I'm not as, my focus isn't all there. But yeah, I just, I don't know. It didn't grab me.
I get it. I do.
It was kind of really repetitive. And then I was like, all these dudes are naked and they're walking into this stuff. And so like,
you know
that she's not human.
How can you fall asleep when there's naked dudes walking around, Carly?
I was just, because they were like naked dudes. They were like, you know, they were there for one reason, and then they ended up being there for another reason.
So I wouldn't let Carly read the IMDb trivia about this movie, because I wanted to leave a very specific part of how it was made out. So the most amazing part of this movie is that Scarlett Johansson drove around in this van in Scotland with, you noticed how, like, the back of the van, like, behind her was all, like, black? That's because in the back of the van was a filmmaking crew and the director, and they were driving around the streets of Scotland, and she was literally pulling over, talking to random dudes, trying to get them in the van. That is 100%
That's
real.
Hilarious.
Those dudes are not actors. I mean, some of them are, but a lot of them aren't. And yeah. the director's very hush-hush about which ones are actors and which ones aren't. I just assume the ones that end up naked are the actors. I don't...
Yeah. I would hope, I mean...
But I mean, they disguised her, and she's in Scotland, where she's probably not as well-known. And it wasn't at a time where she was, like, uber... I guess she was uber popular. But they, you know, they put her in a wig and makeup and... You know, could you imagine, like, just pulling over and trying to talk some dude into your van? Like, come on, that's gotta make you love this movie a little bit.
No.
Yeah.
It makes it more interesting, I will say that.
My husband wanted to watch just, like, the beginning part with me. He's like, I want to see who these dudes are that she gets in the van.
No, it's definitely interesting, and, I mean, that's hilarious and yeah. also very awesome.
The first scene I wanted to talk about, well, there's lots of scenes to talk about, but, the beach scene is a big one, and gives a lot of information on who she is, I think. So how did you feel about the beach scene, Carly? You want to talk a little bit about your viewing experience?
I thought it was really weird. I definitely thought that it for sure gave an insight as to the not human qualities of these two people. Obviously, because it takes a real special kind of person to just like leave a screaming child cold on the beach. but I also was like real perturbed about the people, I guess, that were going into the water.
Were you yelling at them to swim, to not try to swim against the current? Because I was like, no, swim parallel to the beach. That's what you're supposed to do. By the way, that's what you guys are supposed to do. Don't try to, first of all, don't go out after your dog. Your dog's a better swimmer than you.
I would 100% go in after my dog.
Well, you have a corgi because corgis have little legs and maybe they're not good swimmers. But a normal dog, like a normal sized dog with normal limbs, like you,
to be fair, most of my dogs would be terrified to go into the ocean, especially, I don't know. This scene was very far.
But they're very, I mean, dogs are very good swimmers. And there was an event just recent, like not that long ago in San Diego where this literally did happen. And a woman went out to save her dog and the dog survived and she did not because the dog figured out how to get offshore and she could not figure that out. So, I mean, it does happen. Don't chase after your dogs.
I was, like, legitimately expecting the dog to pop back up because you do see it, like, its little head go down. But I was, like, expecting everybody else to, like, drown and then him to come back up. But I was just like, why is this husband so stupid that, like, he gets rescued? Like, he's having a hard time. He's not the most athletic of men and the water is very, very rough. So, like, this guy comes and saves him. And then he goes back into the water. Like, I understand his wife is, like, drowning, but his baby is also on the beach. So, like, this scene was, like, real weird to me. Like, it didn't really feel real, and it didn't really make a lot of sense.
You're not thinking in that scenario. You just might go back out. That baby crying on the beach, it's hard to watch. Especially since they didn't find it.
If the baby wasn't there, I would 100% believe it. But I feel like there comes a point in time where, like, you get it. Like, you're as, especially as a father, you're like, I have a baby. I'm just going to leave him on the beach. I don't know. I almost drowned already, and this guy saved me. And then surfer guy passes out because he's exhausted. And then Scarlett comes over and clubs him on the head with a rock and then drags his body.
Just drags him away.
So, like, then.
But here's the thing. Like, she looks annoyed by it, and she looks, like, the way I view the beginning of this movie is she has a job she hates. Like, it's kind of like that, right? Where she's just like, I guess I gotta drive around and talk to these dudes and lure them back to my creepy house. It feels like that, right? Like, there's no emotion. If there is any emotion, it's just like annoyance. Like, that's what I see out of it. She's very robotic, but I mean, she's an alien, so she has weird alien emotions I can't understand.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel like she's annoyed. I just feel like she's on autopilot and, like, this is just what she does.
That could be it, too.
But that, so, I don't know.
No.
I've only seen it.
I don't either. Here's the thing. This is the part about the movie. Like, it's totally up to your own interpretation. It's not like it's clear cut and, you know, there's, like, a yes, yes, she's an, I mean, obviously she's an alien, but beyond that, there's not much information available.
Yeah.
On how she's feeling, because you don't really get a sense of how she's feeling till like towards the middle and end of the movie. But I do like the beach scene, because it does show her like complete indifference to human life and zero compassion for human life. She doesn't start to realize, what's actually happening till like towards the middle of the movie. You know, like she trips and falls on her face and these strangers help her up and she starts to realize like, oh, there's human kindness. Like there's this whole other level to it. When she's in traffic and the guy comes and brings her a rose and
there's
blood on it. You know, she really, I think that's like when the main switch happens, you know, she notices, like, oh, here's this red goo I'm stealing from all these dudes, right? But then it's, you know, blood often symbolizes, you know, birth of something new or like a new part of the story, new understandings. And, yeah, I definitely got that there, because once that happens, the whole story kind of switches. And she just can't seem to go through with the same thing she was doing. But let's describe a little bit about what she's actually doing, which is luring these guys into this creepy fucking house. Like, these guys must be hard up for some hot tail if they're willing to go in this creepy-ass house.
Yeah, I feel like once they get to this house, they just don't notice anything that's around them, because... Yeah. You see them just looking directly at her. Obviously, right. They're not noticing that they're going into this weird pool thing. And the only guy that isn't like in the spell is the disfigured guy. And she's like, you have to look at me.
Yeah, and I don't know if she's the one putting that spell on them, and then maybe that's why he's immune to it, because she's super nice to the disfigured man.
Yeah.
And, you know, she even tells him his hands are nice, and they're not nice hands, by the way. Those hands are gnarly and his fingernails are dirty. And
yeah, they
are. Made me want to vomit. but she's like, you know, she's complimenting him. She was really feeding his ego and trying to make him feel good and comfortable. And then she just couldn't go through with it. And there was this, you know, there was definitely a switch there, you know, where she couldn't quite go through with it. And that's the only scene where she really gets fully naked, when she's like luring these men in.
Yeah.
Usually she's just like in her bra and then they just
follow her. Yeah.
Totally sucked in by this weird.
They get super naked.
They do. And they have boners.
They're real excited to be there.
They are legit excited to be there. I don't know that that's. You. Yeah, you don't see that every day in a movie.
Yeah, shriveled up.
No, there's no shrivelly ones. They're ready to go.
No, they get shriveled up.
Oh.
Under the goo. Under the goo.
You meant the penises.
They are so excited to be there.
Anyway, what did you think about the scene where both the guys were in the goo? And it was like the only interaction between two beings that didn't involve Scarlett Johansson's character. They're just like in this goo together, and the one just loses his whole insides and his skin floats away. I mean, that gotta kind of get your attention, right?
Well, I was really unimpressed at the guy's reaction, the like fresh meat, if you will. His if that was me and I was like in this weird,
he's in thing. Tar, Carly. What do you want him to do? Swim away?
Well, like, he understands. I mean, you get the idea that he kind of, like, he obviously doesn't understand where he is, but, like, he, like, reaches out and touches the guy. They, like, touch hands, kind of. And then all of a sudden, like, there wasn't even any, like, there wasn't a look of, like, oh my, what the fuck just happened to that guy? It was just, like, he just was staring.
He was in shock because the guy just lost his fucking skin.
Didn't even scream, is all I'm saying.
I'm gonna put you in a vat of tar and see if you can scream.
But if I was in a vat of tar, I would be able to see.
That's true. Well, it's alien tar.
Me.
It's alien tar. Okay, we don't know what it's like, and if you could scream in it.
I feel like that guy's reaction was real confusing.
You are legit entitled to your opinion.
I was like, oh, come on. Even sitting there watching it, I was like, oh,
come on, you weren't at all impressed by those effects, though? Come on, that was amazing. I thought that was a really cool scene. I legit love that scene.
Absolutely. Okay,
let's move on. Since we don't agree on that. Let's move on with the part where she decides she's just gonna leave. So after the disfigured dude, she lets him go. The motorcycle guy goes and gets him. So I feel like the motorcycle guy is basically in charge, right? Seems like he's like kind of like the muscle and she's kind of like the lure.
Yeah, I didn't really understand that relationship, to be honest. It just seemed... Because the first time that you see him is at the beginning when he goes and gets that chick's body, who we don't know if she's dead because she, like, cries after she's, like, done getting naked. Like, Scarlett Johansson steals all of her clothes. And so, like...
It's the same body. So you steal the same skin as an alien. You go in the skin, and then you go to Earth, and you lure these guys. And then my interpretation of it is the same thing keeps happening over and over again, where these aliens... get into the human life and eventually die because they make bad decisions. And then they get brought back up to, I mean, this is just my interpretation. They don't explain this at all, but they get brought back up and then they take the skin off and put them on someone else. And then they go back down and do the thing again. Is that not what you got of it? And I like the tear because the tear is like, you know, a loss of their life, their experience.
But it's the alien body? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like the alien body goes into that skin suit that he grabs at the beginning. No?
Because the girl is not Scarlett Johansson.
Right, but it was someone before Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. You think that the person at the beginning was like another alien body?
Yes.
Okay. I guess that makes sense, except for that she was crying.
Well, yeah, and in the beginning, you can hear, you know how when that whole scene is happening, you hear her go like,
yeah,
duh,
yeah.
Duh, duh. She's learning how to speak English.
Right.
So that when she goes down.
That makes sense to me.
Okay.
I guess I just don't understand the alien crying, if that's the alien at the beginning. The body, I mean. The body. Like,
you don't understand the tear coming out because it's the same. If it's a similar experience to what happened to Scarlett at the end of the movie, or some even might interpret it as her actually being her, although I don't think so because she got so badly burned. But when they bring her up, the body up, and they're removing her clothes, it's because they're going to remove her skin and take it and put it on another alien body and send it to Earth. I mean, that's just how I interpreted it. Again.
Okay. I can understand. I can buy that for sure.
Okay. I mean, again, I'm not an expert, nor did I, like, this is just my experience watching it. That's how I viewed it.
I feel like it would be really interesting to read the book and then watch the movie.
I feel like the book's probably a lot different, honestly.
Yeah. But yeah. I feel like it might also, like, I don't know, if, like,
illuminate
the themes
more.
Or ideas are kind of still the same, yeah, you might get a little bit more background.
Yeah. Okay. I really like when she runs away and, like, tries to be human almost. She just is like, I'm just leaving this. I don't want to do this anymore. She goes to a restaurant and orders cake, you know, which is just such a funny thing to
delicious.
Choose. It does look delicious. It's just immediately like cannot handle it. She's like,
she hates it.
Okay, apparently I can't eat. What can I do? So she just tries all these different like human interactions that she has no experience with. And, you know, she tries to have sex and she can't because she doesn't have a vagina or something. You know,
gets so worried about it. She's like,
she's very upset about it. You know, she tries to do all these different things. There's very little experiences she can have that are realistic for human life. And I feel for her. Like, it's sad. She doesn't feel at home anywhere she is. You know, she doesn't seem like she's comfortable with the job she's given on Earth. And she doesn't feel comfortable trying to blend in as human. And it's just, I don't know. I personally can relate to it. So maybe that's why I love it so much, is that, you know, sometimes you just don't feel like you fit in anywhere, and you have to try all these different things to try to feel it out. And, I mean, I feel for her. I feel bad for her. And even though she's not a compassionate being, I feel like she's learning how to be a compassionate being, or she's trying to be a compassionate being. And towards the end, when the man finds her and is terrible to her and attacks her, you know, her ultimate end is very sad. I just feel like it's a beautiful story. And
it is really sad. The end
it's
is,
a very
the
sad
end was
story.
Like the one part where I was just like, what just happened?
Yeah.
What the heck?
Did you like it when her skin started to come off?
I was just like, ooh, that guy was in for a surprise. Because the whole time I was thinking he's going to be real weirded out when he tries to rip her clothes off and she doesn't have a vagina, and he's going to get real confused.
Yeah.
But then he got really confused because
he didn't get confused. He got pissed. He fucking
he got,
set
I thought
her
he
on
got
fire.
Terrified. And then he like went to go get the.
That guy sucks, by the way.
That guy was the worst.
That guy's the fucking worst.
Absolutely. Right. I wish motorcycle guy got that guy.
Yeah, you know, the motorcycle guy was obviously trying to find her mm-hmm. towards the whole end of the movie and just did not succeed. And, yeah, I mean, the ultimate demise. I mean, you can't, I mean, I if she didn't get burned, I would like to think that the beginning of the movie is actually the end. Do you know what I mean? Where he finds her and drags her out of the woods and brings
right.
her. That's kind of like the first time I viewed it, how I thought it was. But then I was like, no, fuck, he burned her to death. Like, there's no way her body would look like that when he picked her up out of the woods. So.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could be a similar thing that keeps happening where the aliens are trying to figure out this human experience and are ultimately disappointed and something terrible happens and they're like, fuck, I have to do this again. Because there is a part in the movie. Do you remember the part in the movie where she's, you know, she's just standing there putting on lipstick and she's just standing there dead-eyed and the motorcycle dude's walking around her inspecting her. You
yeah.
know, I kind of felt like that's like, okay, are you still in there? Are you still alien? Or are you starting to transform into this human-brained woman, you know?
That's kind of what I got the idea of, too, is that he yeah. was kind of like, okay, are you okay? Are we still
are you
on
still
the same
good?
Page?
Are
you
still
going
to,
you know, abduct these men?
Right.
What's going on?
Yeah. So I don't know what these aliens were using these insides and or skin for. I don't know why it was just men. They didn't explain that. And I kind of like that they didn't, because it really was all about her and her experience. And most of it from her point of view only. So, all in all, I totally recommend this movie if you're into slow-moving art house movies, or if you really like Stanley Kubrick and can handle like a really long-winded, long-shot movie. But I can understand where Carly's coming from too. Like, it might not be your cup of tea. I think it's worth a watch and it's worth a try. I think there's nothing else really like it out there right now. And, if
That's
anything.
Very true.
If anything else, it's at least interesting to watch. Just don't watch it when you're tired. Don't watch
don't.
It at the
you
end
will
of the day.
Pass right out.
Drink a cup of coffee.
Eight times.
Yeah. But all in all, okay, we can stop talking about that movie now. But all in all, that was Under the Skin. Check it out. It's on Amazon Prime if you are interested.
It's really interesting. I'm looking at the
it's at least interesting.
For
yeah.
it, and there's like pretty much everybody that was involved with that movie. That's the only movie that they've been involved with.
Right. Because there was a lot of, like, they wanted really normal-looking people. They wanted, you know, and, like, a lot of, like I said, a lot of those guys are just random dudes they found on the streets of Scotland that were willing to talk to someone who pulled over in a van. Which is
not only that, but, like, the other guy that wrote it with
yeah.
Jonathan Glazer.
Yeah.
Walter Campbell's the only thing that he's done.
Yeah, but Jonathan Glazer also did Sexy Beast, which is also one of those movies that you either love it or hate it. I personally love Sexy Beast too, but I haven't seen it.
I feel like that's
it.
How Nick Reffin is too, because his movies are yeah. kind of art housey.
Yeah.
You either love them or you hate them, unless it's Drive, because I feel like Drive is a little bit more.
Drive is definitely art housey though, and I fucking love Drive. Oh my God.
It is.
I love it.
amazing.
I'm a sucker for a good art house movie, though. I am, if there's like good music or like, and I really love the sounds of this movie, by the way. Like, great musical composition towards the end. I like the weird like theme song that comes in at the end.
And it was like it was the noises. I liked them. They were good.
Is this the movie where you had the,
no.
What was it? Oh, okay. That was an Ex Machina. We can talk about that then. I couldn't remember that.
I almost used that same word and I was like, nope.
Nope. Not this one.
This movie. Wrong.
Well, let's now talk about Ex Machina, which is basically a more action-filled, easier-to-watch version of Under the Skin, except it's with a robot instead of an alien. I mean, basically, it's the same. I feel like, anyway. They're very similar movies.
I 100% love this movie. I thought this movie was great.
I'm so glad you liked it. I knew you would at least like this one.
I loved it. I really like Oscar Isaac. I can pretty much watch anything that he's in.
Who's Oscar Isaac again? I don't know who he was in this one.
He was the Nathan. He was the doctor.
Oh, he was Nathan. That's right.
He's
a great actor.
Also in like Inside Llewyn Davis. And he's also in, most people know him because he's Poe Dameron in the new Star Wars movies.
Okay.
So,
nice.
He's great. And Alicia Vikander as Ava, phenomenal.
She was great in this movie. So great. Like I said, it's similar thematically. It's about a guy who wins a contest at his company. He's a coder for computers, computer coder. I don't know computers. He's a computer coder and he wins this contest at his work where he gets to go to his boss's house. And his boss is some famous inventor, creator, robotic person. And he gets to go to his house and just hang out with him for a week. And it's his experience there.
I like that this was, Alex Garland's first, it's his directorial debut.
Yes. It is.
How perfect. He obviously was a writer. He wrote Dread and 28 Days Later and Sunshine, which, I love Sunshine so much. It was so good. Being
Sunshine.
Your first directorial debut, I recommend it. You should definitely check it out. Yeah. Amazing. What a great job.
Well, he did this after 28 Days Later. I'm pretty sure, didn't he?
He wrote 28 Days Later, but he didn't direct it.
Oh, it's his first directorial debut.
Yeah.
Got you. Okay, cool. Yeah, it was, I think in terms of directing, it was really well done.
Excellent.
Really well shot. The sets were fantastic. The scene shots outside were amazing. Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous scene shots. Just all in all. Beautiful framing. I loved the way it was shot.
Me too.
If it's his first attempt at that, that's fucking impressive.
So good.
Yeah. So a lot of like the themes in this movie deal with consciousness and what is consciousness and also tech paranoia. So I really liked both of those themes playing the theme parallels there. One of my favorite scenes, and I know I'm totally jumping ahead and I don't care. I really want to talk about this dance scene. It's like the weirdest scene. It seems so weird and out of place. And it's just, for some reason, I absolutely love it. Oh my God.
That's so funny. Yeah.
See, this is why I shouldn't drink when we podcast, because I'm just going to jump all over the fucking place.
No, I love it. It was definitely very bizarre because you're like, what is going on?
I'm just going to dance with my robot chick. It's cool. Yeah. Like, and we're going to do this choreographed dance with this like cool red light behind us.
Yeah. I was definitely like, okay, it just got weird. It just got weird.
So basically Caleb wins this contest, goes to this guy Nathan's house, who is an evil genius. I mean, he's not evil, he's human genius, but he's got that weird, like, I'm a genius and I know it. He's very pompous. He's very full of himself.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, he is this owner of the world's largest internet company, apparently. Right. So he has all the money and he's obviously very smart.
Yeah, and when he's helicoptering, okay, so you have to helicopter into Nathan's property.
Yeah.
And when they're helicoptering in, the helicopter guy goes, oh, the guy, Caleb goes, oh, when are we going to get there? Or when are we going to get to his property? And the helicopter guy goes, oh, we've been flying over his property for the last 2 hours. 2 fucking hours? Are you kidding me? How much property does this guy have?
So insane. So insane. But then it's like also
that's
the
unrealistic
place
though, right?
To like
I feel like that's unrealistic.
I mean, if
I've
you're
never
gonna
flown in a helicopter, but if it's anything like an airplane, 2 hours is a lot of fucking land.
That's a ton.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess if you're going to be making artificial intelligence, you don't want them to be able to just be able to like walk out the front door.
That's totally true. That's totally true.
I
was very scared for Caleb, like for most of this movie. Just like, no.
Well, because like Nathan says weird things like, you know, they have issues with the power just like shorting out sometimes. And when the power shorts out, all the doors automatically like get locked or whatever. And
yeah. Wouldn't you tell someone about that ahead of time? Like he just waits till it happens and Caleb asks him about it. He's like, oh, there's a power outage. I was locked in my room. He's like, ah, yeah, that happens. Sometimes.
That happens.
Like, what?
So
fuck you. Like, tell me about that.
Nothing can get out. Nothing can get in. And then he's like, well, why don't you have someone come fix it? And he's like, well, because I had to kill them because there's too much top secret information. And you're like, he's probably joking, but he could be serious. And
yeah, like, was that a joke or no? I don't know. I don't feel like Nathan would kill anybody. I feel like Nathan acts like he was killing some people. But I think ultimately, Nathan's basically a decent guy with a giant ego. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he, I think he thinks he likes to think of himself as God and all those type of things. But he's not, I don't think he really, like, buys into it. Like, there's insecurities there. He's really insecure. And whenever Caleb says anything smart or, like, figures anything out that he's doing, he acts like, yeah, whatever. Like, he's very insecure, I feel like, when it comes to his intelligence, even though he's probably been told he's a genius since he was, like, 13 years old. So, or younger. I don't know.
He's also just very smart because, obviously, as we find out later in the movie, he is playing Caleb. As well, because, you know, he tells him, oh, you're the best programmer and that's why I had to choose you because, you know, you're so smart and you're the best programmer that we have in the company. And so I wanted you, like, your input on this, you know, AI to see what you felt. But then, like, I feel like the whole time until the very end, you're, like, not really sure about Nathan's intentions. I mean, obviously he's an alcoholic and he gets real wasted, like, every day, except for the last day. And so you're never, like, really sure. Like, he seems very unstable when, what's her name, Kyoko, like, drops wine. He, like, freaks out and he, you know, he just doesn't seem like a very stable guy. And so you're
not. No, he's definitely not stable.
Yeah,
no.
You're not really sure where he stands. Is he going to let Caleb go? And you don't really find out at the end that, like, this is just seriously something that he's been working on. He's been like, obviously he's a recluse. He lives in this cement house, like away from anybody.
Right.
So he's going to be a little weird. But his intentions are fairly noble. Except for the fact that he's like making fake people.
Right.
Naked
women.
Well,
yeah. And I mean that, yeah, strictly women. And most of the time they're nude.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. Like, ooh.
Yeah.
And you can have sex with them. So.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to in the future, guys. I don't know. Like, that's weird. Yeah, that scene where he's telling him about how they can have sex, it's just, for some reason, disturbing to me.
Caleb's like, actually, that's not what I was asking.
Yeah, I was literally not asking that, and you keep talking about it. Thanks. So we meet Ava, who is this beautiful AI, and basically Caleb thinks it's his job to do this test on her to see if she's if he can be tricked by if she's conscious, if she's a conscious being or not. Mm-hmm. And he obviously is very, very fooled by it, but also we are led to believe that she is conscious. She's a conscious being. She's not a compassionate being necessarily, but she is a conscious being. And she's very smart, smarter than everyone else in the building, as far as I'm concerned.
Except for maybe Nathan, but that's because he understands her. He knows what she wants.
That's true. And towards the end of the movie, I even said, like, isn't she crazy for leaving the only man who created her and the only man that could probably fix her if something goes wrong? But at the same time, like, well, she might be able to fucking fix herself. Like,
I think she can. I think she's she's smart enough that she, I think she's self-sustainable for the most part. I mean, unless, like, her hand gets ripped off or something like that. Because obviously she needs to go to these spare parts.
Well, that's the first thing he does when she attacks him is he rips off her arm, which at first seems like, well, why'd you rip off her arm? Why didn't you just, like, rip off her head? But ultimately, I mean, that's the easiest thing to fix, and it keeps her from having all this extra strength that she would normally have. So it is ultimately a good decision, except he doesn't survive to see that through. No. Spoiler alert!
Hopefully he dies. It already.
Hopefully, and you guys should have watched that already, by the way. I'm sorry if you didn't. Okay. But not that sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Yeah, I really also liked the part, skipping ahead again, sorry. I'm just going to talk about my favorite scenes. That's just what I'm going to do because I drink wine and that's how it happens. When there's masks on the wall, like the faces, the different faces of the different robots he's created, he has them on the wall and they remind me of, like, you know, trophies, like hunting trophies. These these are his, like, trophies that he hangs on his wall, but they're just faces of these different robots. And at the end, when Ava breaks out and sees these masks on the wall, she, like, feels it. It looks very, like, similar to how an animal would look at it. You know, like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's when you see her compassion, right? You see compassion when she sees Kyoko. And you see compassion when she sees these faces on the wall. And those are really the only times you see her genuine compassion. All the other compassion you see in this film is totally fake. And she's really able to mimic compassion and to really read people. Like, she knows how to read everybody. Cause basically what Nathan says is he pretty much programmed her brain by, hacking every cell phone in the world and monitoring people's facial reactions and voices. So she gets it. She understands, like, even a micro change in your face.
Caleb looks a little, like, changes his expression, she can says, oh, you're feeling uncomfortable. Right. You feel this way, you feel that way. She knows how to read him. And obviously Nathan made her basically for him. So, like, he's going to feel some sort of attachment. And Caleb was chosen very specifically for these weaknesses in his character.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel for Caleb. He totally got had by both other beings in this movie. Nathan had him from the beginning, fed his ego and just had him in the palm of his hand. I mean,
and so did Ava.
And so did Ava. 100. But Ava had him in the palm of his hand, like, the second he walked in.
But I mean, she, like, fed his ego. And, like, it's like, I want us to go on a date. Don't you want to go on a date with me? Like, do you find me attractive?
Yeah. Yeah. She knows a lot more about how to read men than I do.
Yeah. Give me some of those skills.
Right. I have none of those skills. But I'm married. I don't need them anymore. maybe I need them more than ever. Who knows? Okay. Yeah, I totally feel for Caleb. He gets fucked in more ways than one in this movie. He gets, you know, Nathan feeds his ego, tells him, oh, I picked you because, oh, sorry, I lied originally. You didn't win this contest. I handpicked you because you're the best coder in my company. he didn't pick him because he's the best coder in the company. At the end, you find out he picked him because he has no family. His family died. He has limited friends. He has a limited life. And he just hacked his,
doesn't
like,
have a girlfriend.
Watches
the porn.
Right. Hacked his porn profile and created Ava to look like his porn profile so he would be attracted to her. And the real test was, can Ava break out using him? Right. So, I don't know. That's a crazy reveal at the end. And it's so sad.
I think it's fascinating. And it's like, I was cheering for Ava so hard, as like terrible as I felt for Caleb pretty much being left to starve to death in his little glass prison. I wanted to give Ava a high five.
I do too. As a woman watching this movie, I totally root for Ava, even though she's not human. Like, I'm like, fuck yeah. It's nice to see a woman be like, I don't care about any of you. I care about me.
I'm going to get this nice dress. I'm going to look banging. My hair is going to be adorable. I'm going to go outside, shut all the doors, and get on this helicopter.
Yeah.
And go.
I mean, ultimately, here's the thing. She doesn't really have compassion. She has a little bit of compassion. It's for her own kind. Mm-hmm. It's for her own self. So even though she might recognize Caleb's not a bad guy, he would threaten her existence outside of this box that she's created in. So when
she leaves, he's disposable to her.
He's disposable, but ultimately he's also a liability.
Yeah.
So she's thinking logically also. So she might even feel bad. Who knows? You don't know if she really feels bad or not leaving him, but she leaves him because she knows that he can't fucking exist in this world if she's gonna exist in it. And I really liked a lot of these little nuggets in the film that keep popping up. Like Mary in the black and white room. I loved that part where they explain that and they keep touching upon it and they keep showing things in black and white. Mm-hmm. I loved that. I also really loved like the Jackson Pollock painting. They keep showing that. You know, these themes just keep like popping back up, throughout the movie. It's just really, really well done, really well thought out. Mary in the black and white room, we can talk about that a little bit if you want.
I thought that was really cool. I really liked that story.
So basically, Mary is a computer and she's in a black and white room. And she knows everything about color, right? She knows the wavelengths. She knows every color that exists. She knows everything there is to know about color. But she's in a black and white room, so she's never experienced color. She's never seen color. So the theory behind it is that she leaves the black and white room and then she can become a being because she has finally experienced that which she knows. So Ava's obviously Mary in the black and white room where she knows everything there is to know about humans, but she hasn't experienced it firsthand. And I loved how Caleb, when he's dreaming about her, dreams about her being outside with him, but it's completely in black and white because that's his Mary in the black room.
Yeah.
Black and white room is he's outside with this AI that's never been outside and he's imagining what it would be like, but he doesn't know. You know, I just really loved how they did that. How that was
super awesome. It was a nice little addition.
Shot. Yes. Yeah. It was just a nice like thematic change.
I liked it.
I did. And the whole Jackson Pollock thing.
Not deliberate, not random, something in between.
Yes, not deliberate. Yes. The Jackson Pollock painting represents creativity, creating something that's somewhere between deliberate and totally not.
Yeah, like he says, you know, do you think that he would have painted this deliberately? He would have been like, no, I can't do anything. But like,
and that's ultimately why he has this test for Ava, mm-hmm. to see if she can get out, because he doesn't quite know everything about her. He gave her possibilities within her mind to kind of go whichever way she wanted. And so when he created her, there was some deliberate choices he made. But when he shows the brain of the AI, which is this gel type structure.
I loved that so much.
It was great. I was like, can they really fucking do that? Because that's so cool.
I was like, I want to touch it.
I do. It's like a jello mold with all these like lights in it. And I'm just like, I want to play with that. I'm a dork. But it's a gel-like structure. So it can move however it wants. There's no circuit board. It's not A or go in lane A or go in lane B. It can go wherever it wants. And so, that's kind of like the thought behind Jackson Pollock is where is she going to go? And they keep showing shots of that. And even towards the end of the film, during the film, they're showing session one, session two, session three. And this whole time you think it's Caleb's sessions with Ava, but really it's Ava's sessions with humans. And so at the very end session, I think it's session seven.
Yeah.
There's no one else there. It's just her experiencing,
getting
out. Yeah, getting out. So, I love that. And that's like kind of when it all comes together and you really feel for it. Now, a lot of people don't like this ending. I don't know if you're aware of this, but a lot of people don't like that she left Caleb, in the house. And to those people, I say, right. And to those people, I say, you're wrong. It's a perfect ending.
So great.
I love that ending.
And she was acting. She
and
was
I wonder if
Caleb.
It's like a dude chick thing. Like, I wonder if guys just totally relate to Caleb and the women more relate to Ava. I don't know. Because even though she's not a human, there's something totally woman-like and relatable about her.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she used basically her sexual power to get what she wanted. Right. And then she was like, okay, I'm free. I don't need you anymore. See ya.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what happens to you, but I don't care. I'm just going to go on with my life and live it the way I need to live it.
Not my problem.
And, you know, and it's funny because this whole story, she's a very integral and important part of the story, but really the main relationship you're dealing with is Caleb and Nathan. Mm-hmm. So like towards the end when it starts to just be about her, I'm like, fuck yeah, go girl.
I was so excited and honestly would have been really not upset. I still would have liked the movie if like she let Caleb out, but I just think it's so much more perfect that she doesn't because yeah. It just makes, with the story, it makes sense. This was her test. Her test was, can she get out? And she owned it. And she was like, wait here to Caleb forever. wait here while I go put on some skin and then lock you in your room and leave you.
And he totally does. He's so subservient to everybody in this film. I feel for him, but I'm rooting for her.
Absolutely.
And I really also liked how, you know, she's this, she's supposed to be this prisoner throughout this whole movie, but ultimately I feel like she has all the power. She can turn the power out whenever she fucking wants to. Her room is ginormous. Mm-hmm. And whenever anyone comes to see her and they're in this little box, you know, ultimately I don't, like, when you see her, you don't really feel like she's weak ever. The only time you kind of sense that is when Nathan comes in the room and tears up her picture, and later you realize that most of that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And she fucking hates Nathan. And when she kills him, I was, like, okay with it.
That stabbing was, like, so intense. I was like, oh, my God.
I think the fact that it was silent is something that you never see.
My
like,
favorite
you never
was
see
him
a
walking
silent stabbing. Like, she's just, it just goes in and comes out. Like, it's very mechanical. It's like any other machine you see. And he's just like, walks away like, oh, this sucks.
That was my favorite. I was like, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
I felt for Kyoko. I wanted her to have a better ending. I thought it was weird that she got knocked in the jaw and then she was just dead. Like, is that what happened to her? Like, she's done? Like, she barely got touched and she's just out for the count.
Yeah, I guess we, I mean, maybe because of, I don't know, maybe it did something to her brain.
Yeah, like it knocked it loose or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Obviously, Nathan had to have known something was going to happen because he
Yeah.
made her. But
Yeah.
no, that was interesting.
Yeah, and Kyoko's a really great like being throughout this movie because you don't know she's an AI for most of it. And she doesn't speak, he keeps saying she doesn't speak English, but you can tell by her eyes that
That
she
she
understands
understands.
everything going on. But she still acts like a robot. It's
She probably just
weird.
doesn't speak because she doesn't make
Yeah.
any noises, really.
But she does everything he wants her to do,
Yeah.
and she has no shit about it. Like, she doesn't, like, oh, I'm gonna turn on the music and we're gonna dance. And, Caleb comes in and wants to see you and you get undressed. It's like, it's weird.
I wonder if she was
Because,
programmed that way, and then
yeah,
maybe
maybe.
when at the end, because Ava whispers something to her, maybe that's like reprogramming her to basically do what Ava wants now.
Maybe, but I think the mere fact that she went to go see Ava, while Ava was still in her little prison, shows that she had some sort of consciousness and some sort of free will.
Yeah.
Because obviously she never saw her before because Ava's like, who are you? And I don't know. I really liked that little, like, duality, that little, like, girl power, AI power,
Team up on Nathan.
friendship they had that was very brief, where they're holding hands and they're very close and they're whispering to each other and we don't know what they're saying, and it's kind of nice that way.
Yeah.
It kind of like almost reminded me of the end of Lost in Translation, when Bill Murray and Scarlett Johansson are whispering and then you're like, what are they
What are
saying?
they saying? Even on closed captioning, it's just inaudible whisper. Oh, which brings me to my favorite closed captioning ever. Was I think it was the scene, I'm not 100% sure because I didn't write it down, but I tried to remember. I think it's the scene where he like cut his arm in front of the mirror, but it just says throbbing ominous music. And I was
Well, it was throbbing, ominous music. I
oh,
mean,
that's perfect.
if you were deaf, you would still get the point. Yeah,
Throbbing.
I love that scene, by the way. We didn't talk about it when he starts to really lose his grip,
Yeah.
with reality, and he goes in the bathroom and cuts his arm. First, he starts looking under his eye, and he starts like looking on his side, and he seems really confused, and he's not sure. He thinks he might be an AI,
He's
right?
losing
Like
his
that's what
shit.
he's doing,
Yeah.
because when the AIs take off their skin, that's what they do, is they go under their eye and they go on their side, and
Yeah.
he has all these scars on his back because he was in a terrible car accident. So I could see how he might think that he might be an AI if he doesn't have these real relationships and stuff. But it's very strange to see his total breaking point and his total lose. He totally loses his grip on reality. I think that's a fantastic scene, and I'm so glad that they put it in the movie because it really adds a whole other dimension to his
It
character.
really does, because he,
Yeah.
now you see maybe Caleb's not necessarily super stable. I really like this, the actor that plays Caleb. He was actually, he's also in Star Wars, with, Oscar Isaac. He's General Hux. And then, he's Bill Weasley in Harry Potter. He's just like, oh, and he was also in The Revenant. He's just like one of those guys.
Seen any of these
You've never seen Harry Potter?
movies. Okay, I've seen a couple Harry Potters. I honestly think they're all the same. I'm not a Harry Potter
It makes me feel uncomfortable. That's okay. Watch The Revenant though, because it's very,
I do, that is on my list. I do want to watch that.
it's obviously like Leo won an Oscar for it. But it's also very like
Leo, your
arthousey
best
as
friend.
well. I think you'll really like the shots in it. He this guy, I don't even know his name. The guy that plays Caleb, he is a captain in The Revenant, and he's great. And he's like one of those actors who, like, you see him and he's like vaguely familiar, but you're not, you know, you don't really know his name. At least I don't, but I see him in all these things and I'm like, why does that guy look so familiar? Oh, because he's in freaking Star Wars. Oh, because he's in Harry Potter.
Oh, I've seen Star Wars. I've seen the Star Wars movies.
Have you seen the newest Star Wars?
No, I haven't seen the newest one. Is that the one he's in?
Yeah.
This is a really interesting conversation for podcasting.
He's like the general. He's the general of the dark side.
Oh, all right. Well, good to know.
He's like one step under Adam Driver's character.
Well, I look forward to seeing him in it because I think he's a great actor. I think all the acting in this movie is really good. And definitely worth a watch. We both agree on this one, that this one's definitely worth a watch. Also playing on Amazon Prime. Is there anything else you want to add for Ex Machina, Carly?
Nope. Just see it if you haven't already. And, I mean, hopefully, we ruin everything for you.
Yeah, but this one's definitely worth a watch and or even a rewatch. The second time, I got so much more out of it. Both of these movies, the second time, just made it better, which is nice because sometimes you rewatch movies and they're just not as good. Like last week, we did It Follows, and the more I watch that movie, like the less I like it. Like I still like it. I still think it's a great horror movie. But you see more of the flaws, whereas these two movies, the more I see it, the more I can appreciate them and the way they were created. Not to say that they're without their flaws, but they're just really well-made movies with lots of little, like, fun details that you might have missed the first time. So worth a rewatch.
Absolutely. Totally agree.
Okay, so let's talk about our next episode. I'm really, really, really excited for our next episode. We're going to be doing a really fun monthly episode for you guys called Let's Make a Monster. I have a lot of female friends who do not like horror movies. A crazy amount of them, which is why Carly is joining me remotely from LA because I really don't have that many. Besides my friend Bree, hi Bree, who just had a baby, so there's no way she was going to do a podcast with me. But I have a bunch of other female friends who don't like horror movies. So basically, I created an entire segment so I can get them on board with horror. The whole entire point of the segment is to try and train my friends to like horror movies.
Exactly.
It's probably the most selfish podcast that's ever been created. We will have a different victim. I'm going to call them victims. Different victim every month. And I will hand pick a movie that I think specifically they will respond to and enjoy. I will interview them before we watch the movie and after. This next segment will be with my friend Meg, who is fantastic. And I hand chose Rosemary's Baby for her. She has no idea we're watching it. We're going to watch it in a couple days with her. So this won't even air before she gets to watch it.
And it's streaming on Amazon you haven't seen it or you want to revisit it. It's a great flick. Everybody should check
it out. It's a classic. It's a classic. Most people have seen it. And if you haven't, I highly recommend it. So we will be doing that. I will try to get my friend Meg to be on board with this movie. So let's see if we can make a monster. Please join us next week. Beyond that, I need to make a couple thank yous because the episode I did all my thank yous for didn't ultimately air. So I just want to say a couple thank yous. Giant thank you to The Horror Show. If you don't listen to The Horror Show, they're fantastic. They do mostly like B-horror movies or like cheesy 80s horror movies. Sean and Joe, they're fantastic dudes. Sean specifically, like, really helped me get this podcast off the ground, taught me what a podcast was, like how to physically do it. He literally drew me a diagram and sent me a picture on like the different parts of like the website and the, you know, the hosting site and the difference and how to really do it. So thank you so much to the Horror Show. Yes. Thank you to the Horror Show and super big thanks to Sean. Please check them out. You can follow them on Twitter at I Hate Horror. And they are also have a website, ihatehorror.com. Also, giant thank you to the girls in the back row. Also, another fantastic website. Kate and Tab are phenomenal podcasters, and I aspire to be as articulate as they are. Tab is fantastic and super knowledgeable about all things horror, and I'm always bugging her about stuff. So thank you to Kate and Tab, and check them out, the girls in the back row, and you can follow them on Twitter at TGITBR. Also follow us on Twitter. We are Final Girls HC. And you can also check out our website at finalgirlshorrorcast.com. You can also follow Carly on Twitter and Instagram. Carly, what's your info there?
Twitter, I am Carly Michelle with one L. And then on Instagram, I am Sharks Are Forever, all spelled out. Normal.
So please follow us. We appreciate you checking out our earlier episodes. We really hope that we get better at this.
We're having a blast.
We are having a great time. I hope you guys are at least having a decent time as well.
Yes.
Follow us. We are now on iTunes. Finally. Yay.
Yes.
So I know, I'm so excited. So please, please check us out on iTunes. And if you'd like, if it, makes you happy, and it would make us happy, please rate us.
Happy.
5 stars is a lovely number if you choose to do so. Yeah, please check us out. And thanks again for joining us, guys. I didn't play around with a sign out, so I'm just going to say bye. I promised I was going to work on a sign out, and I didn't.
I'm just going to say bye.
And thanks to Troy for our music. Thanks, Troy. Okay, bye.
Bye.